And we are live. Hello, everybody. Tucker and the Beard here. Back for another fantastic movie review.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
A marvelous one, if you will.
Ooh, I like what you did there.
Thank you.
I like what you did there.
A little segue into that.
No, this week we went and saw the highly anticipated, at least for me it was highly anticipated.
I was chomping at the bit.
Venom.
Yes.
Finally. We get a true representation of everyone's favorite symbiote antihero.
Symbiosis?
I don't know.
Whichever.
You know, that's certainly up to some interpretation, I would think. But
yeah, we'll get into that. So
absolutely.
Setting up the movie for people that are not aware of.
Oh, let's get the spoiler alert out of the way.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the film, turn it off now.
Just
shut it down. Shut down the video.
And come back later after you've seen the movie.
Yeah, because we're gonna talk all about it. You know, major plot points, maybe twists.
Gonna venomize.
We're certainly going to discuss the post-credit scenes that occur. So,
discussion.
Yeah,
basis.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
Buckle up, Buttercup, because it's about to go down.
It's about to get real.
So,
okay.
So, what was the movie about, Tucker?
So, the movie is based on the Marvel comic character of Venom. And so this is a, dare I say, superhero movie, but this is a known villain turned anti-hero, as you've put it.
I think that for very few moments in the cinematic universes, regardless if we're talking comic book or film, is Venom an actual villain?
Well, and that's, you know, you can Sigmund Freud that one all you want to.
True,
but
true.
Yes, for those unbeknownst that, you know, Venom in the comic starts as a villain.
He starts as a villain.
And then becomes, which they did in this movie, of becoming kind of the anti-hero.
Absolutely.
So it is very much a superhero type film. If you are knowing of comic books and everything, you will know the comic book character of Venom, which has only been portrayed one other time, whether we'd like to acknowledge it or not.
I think we should acknowledge it.
Right, in comparison, was portrayed by...
Can I raise my hand and let you know that I don't think that Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire was amazing.
No, I see what you did there.
It's not as bad as people make it out to be.
No,
but it suffered from too many villains.
Correct.
Trying to do too much with a storyline, and then tossing far too well-known of a character.
Correct.
Into the mix, and not doing it justice.
That deserved to be the only villain in that story.
Absolutely.
Spider-Man 3 suffered from the Batman Forever syndrome. Which, if you're watching the Batman Forever, I lost count at the amount of villains that they had in that movie.
It was about 17 too many.
Yes, seven.
What I mean by that is there were 17 villains in that movie, and it never should have been made.
Yes. I agree, even though you know my feelings as far as Val Kilmer is concerned. But we can bypass that for this discussion.
Absolutely.
So Spider-Man 3, I enjoyed the Tobey Maguire movies we've discussed in the past.
The best Spider-Man on film.
The best, yes, representation. I do enjoy Tom Holland and what he's kind of bringing to the table.
No question about that. I think he's developing into a pretty cool Spider-Man character.
Right.
However, Tobey Maguire still where it's at for me.
As far as
Spider-Man on film, Tobey Maguire is everything.
Tobey Maguire is everything.
Tobey Maguire is everything.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah.
By the Beard.
2018.
Tobey Maguire is everything. So he was portrayed, thank you, I'm going blank on his name right now.
You're going to put me on the spot. You had one job, Tucker.
I know. It'll come to me later on. But in Spider-Man 3, where it was not a...
Topher Grace,
thank you, of that 70s show, Win a Date with Ted Hamilton fame.
I will say this, Topher Grace is the worst possible option for Eddie Brock.
Agreed. It was not, I think it was, when the casting came out on that one, it was...
They could have cast a Jonas brother in that role, and it would have been a better call.
Well, if it was some...
There, Jonas, I said it. Sorry, Topher. You'll never watch this, but just in case you do, you're bad.
It was not your role.
No.
Win a Date with Tad Hamilton?
Solid. Eric Foreman?
Excellent. Fantastic. But yeah, it was portrayed by Topher Grace. It's some Venom thing. I keep on saying betrayed. No. And what he could do with it, he did with it. But coming into this movie... solid casting choice with Tom Hardy of Batman, Dark Knight Rises Bane fame.
This raises a question.
Okay.
Was he better as Venom or was he better as Bane?
I'm going to go with Venom.
I will agree
because
with
you. At the end of the day, other than the, you know, muscular physique, you could have put anybody in that role with the mask on.
True.
And
super jacked for that role.
Super jacked.
Yeah.
Do I give him credit for the job that he did with that movie?
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is you literally could have thrown anybody in there relatively the same. So in this sense...
Could have been John Cena.
But then I never would have seen him.
No one ever would have saw it.
It would be like, what's the invisible villain doing? So that
could have been The Rock.
Could have been a lot
of
things.
Could you imagine Bane asking if everyone can smell what Bane is cooking?
Smell what Bane is cooking, right. It's like, well, and then whoever the guy was that originally did Bane and, you know, the other one. It's been portrayed. But yeah, he did a solid job. But he brought it in Venom. Now, I will say from my sense, I had the bar set relatively...
Pretty high, actually.
You had it,
I had it
pretty,
set
high?
Pretty high?
Okay.
I had high expectations.
I was wanting to see it. I was excited for us to go see it. Movie theater was not packed.
No.
When we went to see it.
Well, we went on a weekday afternoon. Let's... be clear about that.
Hey, movies.
Where
times
most
movie
productive
time.
People are, you know, working or
doing
something.
Things.
Yeah,
we're out real estating, so we have time to be able to do that. So, solid thing. So, I mean, I didn't have my hopes too high. Kind of mixed review. Critics have been tearing this movie kind of apart. Not so good ratings.
So this is for me. This is a weird movie to review because we're supposed to be objective.
Right.
And I'll be 100% honest from a journalistic integrity standpoint.
Wow.
I am unable to be objective about this movie because I was so excited. It's been such a long time coming. I was fanboying pretty hard on the character. Anti-heroes are typically my favorite.
Right.
Comic book characters.
Okay.
So
between this one and Ghost Rider...
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. Everyone knows. Listen.
We don't talk about Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
We don't.
First rule about Ghost Rider is we all pretend it didn't exist in the first place.
Yeah. You never talk about Ghost Rider.
No.
So.
Telling you, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. You caged it up.
Yeah. You caged it real hard.
But the bar was, it was getting good audience reviews, but critics not so much. And I think we can both agree that. If you're not a comic book fan, if
or
you're
even
not...
a fan of the film genre, that's what I come into this saying is that comic book movies aren't being made for comic book nerds.
Okay. It's okay. Not specific, correct.
Not specifically for comic book nerds, like they used to be.
Correct.
Right. So the problem is that people come in with this expectation that it has to be 100% true to whatever story happened to be your favorite.
Right.
And I think that's never going to be the case.
Right. I think we've both discussed the expectation versus reality of I don't want to go, you know, if I was a huge, you know, Captain America, you know, fan or whatever, and going to see Captain America movie that is a story that I've heard before because I've read it before. It's got to be something new, because otherwise,
why go see it? Why? Right. Why am I going to spend my $10 plus popcorn and drinks? It's just
I already know what happens.
And guess what? Almost every major comic book character has several story arcs.
Oh, very much so.
So, and some of those story arcs involve different origin stories. They involve different intrapersonal relationships. Everything can be different other than the personality of the hero, for the most part, or the main focus, as it were. And Venom is not any different than that. I think I counted, and I'm probably wrong because there's probably more, or probably some that people don't count, but there was like 13 different Venom story arcs, none of them being longer than 6 books.
Right. Well, and I'm going into it with a little bit different because, you know, we've talked comic books and movies, you know, at length. And so I'm, you know, the self-professed, you know, geek when it comes to, you know, comic books. But Venom was never one of those ones other than the Spider-Man arc.
Yeah.
Introducing Venom, am I too familiar with? Because, so we saw it with two different eyes, so to speak.
Yeah. Different set of lenses, which is important because that's what these movies are all about. They're introducing a character in a new way, just as if it was a new story arc.
Right. Now, to me, and I think that, you know, I discussed this with you before we went and saw it, you know, my dream thing would have been to this movie because of the Venom storyline that I was used to was involving Spider-Man going into space, doing this battle, the symbiote attaching itself to him. He comes back to Earth, becomes Black Suit Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then becomes that whole thing, kind of the Spider-Man 3-esque without...
Yeah,
you know,
without...
Kind of...
But with Peter Parker going into space instead of...
Right.
It just crashing down.
First spoiler, although I wish it would have happened, Tom Holland, not in the movie.
Not an astronaut.
That has nothing to do with...
There is no Spider-Man in this film. There is no tie-in. And that's because...
Right.
This was more based on the Lethal Protector story arc.
Right, of him going to San Francisco.
Yeah, so Eddie Brock is a disgraced... And they even played around with that origin a little bit, or at least they didn't touch on it enough for me to pick up on it. But Eddie Brock in the book story arc, he's disgraced. He's shunned as a journalist in New York.
Right.
And he moves to San Francisco, which is where the movie takes place.
Correct. This movie starts out with him being a...
Kind of a viral news...
Media...
Personality. He's got kind of... The best I can compare it with is something like a combination of the Drudge Report and...
Geraldo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that's Geraldo. The first thing I could think of.
It's like if the Drudge Report... were on mainstream TV, or if Geraldo was only based on YouTube.
Right.
Or on the internet. So he's kind of this viral video journalist. You know, he's the bad boy who's asking all the hard-hitting questions.
That no one else will ask.
No one else will ask these questions.
You know,
he takes no lip from anyone. He gives... He has nothing to give.
It's
in the way of care.
Right. It's pretty much Tom Hardy playing Tom Hardy.
He's a honey badger. And we all know about the honey badger and its attitude.
Yeah, he does not care about anything.
No.
And he is this hard-hitting journalist and with his girlfriend / fiance.
Within the first 15 minutes of the movie, fiance. Girlfriend at the beginning.
Yes, played by none other than Dawson's Creek famed...
Michelle Williams.
And, you know, love out to the creek.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The breaker of Dawson's heart on multiple occasions.
It's just what she does. She breaks hearts every time she's on screen.
So who is, she portrays a lawyer. She is a lawyer fiance who is working on the villain of the story. I can't even remember his name, but the...
He's the CEO of the Life Foundation.
The Life Foundation, who is doing experiments on homeless people.
Think Elon Musk as an evil genius, even though,
right,
for all we know, Elon Musk is an evil genius.
But because he's so much of a genius, we will never know.
It's true.
That's the mark of a true
evil genius, is that you don't know that they're evil.
Right, exactly.
Until it's too late, and they're bringing back alien life forms to bond to human hosts.
Right.
Killing most of them.
Correct.
That they come in contact with.
Yeah, towards the beginning of the movie, there is a space shuttle coming through space, and it's kind of a... And I never saw this movie, if you did. Movie came out recently called Life with Ryan,
and it was amazing.
Ryan Reynolds. I have not.
It was a fun watch. I shouldn't say it was an amazing film, but it was a fun watch. An alien life form that they capture on a comet somewhere, and they're doing experiments on. Kind of starts becoming self-aware, and then kills everybody.
Kills everybody on the space shuttle. It crashes down on Earth,
and who knows what happens from there.
And there's four symbionts.
Yes.
One escaped during it.
One escaped. Three were...
The one that escaped was not Venom.
No.
No.
The one that escaped was
Riot.
Was Riot.
Yeah, which was the Venom villain of the story. Yeah. But, so the space shuttle is belonging to this guy of this life foundation, which
he's got enough money to shoot his own rockets into space.
Right. I thought it was a nice little hat tip to that movie, though. I haven't seen it, of Life, and the shuttle literally had Life
not
written
a sequel
on it.
Not a sequel.
There you go. So he's in charge of that, but then he tests the symbiotes on human hosts.
Because they don't know how these things work.
Right.
Because they're aliens.
Right. So,
and so they know that they need a host to bond with, because...
For it to survive.
Yeah, because they don't live in an oxygen-rich environment in their native land. And so in order to process oxygen correctly, they need a human host. So they're essentially a parasite.
Right.
That falls into a state of symbiosis.
Right.
Which, I don't want to get super science nerdy on you.
Right. I believed it, though.
Because we can go down that path for another couple hours, and frankly...
Let's not.
We don't need to.
Yeah. And then, because I think at the beginning, they were testing one of them on a rabbit. And
yes.
It was surviving, but as they quickly realized that it was not surviving for very long. The bodies were decomposing and everything. So they were... The bad guy, the owner of this thing, was rounding up a whole bunch of homeless people... transients, and bringing them in and pretty much killing them in the long run because they were not... Either the symbiote didn't bond with the host, or if it did, it was...
It just used up the resources that the host had, which, oddly enough, was a theme from a different Venom story arc.
Okay.
You know, so where, you know, there were the same, you know, the same multiple symbiotes that came to Earth, and... That's what they did. They took on a host. They basically ate it dry from the inside and then moved on to another host.
Right. Which but I thought Venom, was a neat little nod, because they were like, we're giving it water, we're giving it things, but not knowing about Venom, he eats people.
He does. But Venom in that storyline chose to not...
To be a vegetarian.
Its host resources.
Okay. So in this one, it was with the transients and everything, as you come to find out that it was starting to eat pretty much the insides.
Yeah.
And because it wanted to eat meat, you know, it's...
Yeah. You know, it likes human organs.
Right. So Tom Hardy or what's that?
Lungs. Pancreas.
Yeah.
So many snacks.
Yes.
So little time.
So little time. Nice quote. So it becomes Michelle Williams' lawyer is helping this.
The Life Foundation.
The Life Foundation, as representing their lawyer, Eddie Brock. Tom Hardy, being the bad boy journalist that he is, hacks his fiance's computer to
Not cool, bro.
Learn of specific named people that were wrongly...
They were filing lawsuits against the Life Foundation.
Right. For people that had died, but it was wrongful death.
Yeah, wrongful death suits basically from the victims of the human testing on... I'm sure this was not their first foray
right.
into human testing. That
it sounded like it happened quite a bit. It's what they do.
Standard operating procedure.
Anti-life.
Anti-Life Foundation.
The Anti-Life
Foundation. Not cool people.
Not cool. Yeah, if I need to say, if we need to throw this disclaimer, don't test on human beings.
You know what's not cool? Testing on human beings.
It's
don't do that thing.
Be better than that.
Yeah.
Elon. Elon, I know it's you. So, yeah.
If I end up dead.
Yeah, that's why.
Now you know. Look at him first.
So he hacks... his fiance's computer, learns all this information, and the next day or whatever, he is interviewing the head of the foundation, and he calls him to the table using...
Which he's not supposed to do, because this was a... This was controlled. Supposed to be a controlled interview. You're just asking questions about some happy, nice things that this foundation is doing, not the
shuttles
evil...
crashing and people dying and... so he went against the wishes, being the bad boy that Tom Hardy is.
That's what you do.
And confronted him, calling him to the table on the names that were in the lawsuit, which...
Ended the interview abruptly.
Very, very quickly.
Oh my goodness.
Then segueing into him being fired from his job, losing his fiance for betraying her trust.
Because that was not cool.
And... So on and so forth. So then it was black screen 6 months later.
Yeah. Which, you know, it is what it is. And then he gets a phone call from...
The nice scientist.
An employee of the Life Foundation who has grown a conscience.
Correct. She's talking to Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah.
And not really. We're not...
Yeah. It's not a Marvel franchise film, so it can't be associated with Disney characters.
Well, it is, but it never mind.
Yeah.
Jiminy Cricket is not in the movie.
No.
So she contacts Eddie Brock, the only hard-hitting journalist that will help her stop all this killing of...
Madness.
Yeah, all the madness. And after some deliberation, he decides to take her up on it.
And then guess what happens?
Right. Breaks into the wrong cell... At the wrong time.
Gets symbioted.
Symbioted.
Yeah.
Yes.
Symbioted.
Yes.
It's a new word.
He caught the parasite, which starts some kind of funny moments.
Let's be honest. Venom's not cool with being called a parasite.
No.
He takes personal offense to being referred to as a parasite several times
during the course of the film. He does not like being called a parasite.
Yeah. And then hilarity ensues because
it's kind of like a buddy cop film.
It was
like a buddy cop film with an internal voice that is not yours.
But Tom Hardy is Turner and Venom is Hooch.
This is not your room.
Yes.
Yeah. So it has some funny moments where he is kind of put in some awkward situations and all of a sudden the deep Venom voice
pops out. And Venom takes over for a time,
you know,
when necessary to protect his host.
Right. And one of the things that it took me a little bit to try and decide if I liked or disliked about this movie, and I've ended up on that I did like it.
Good to know.
And hear me out.
Okay.
All right. We've had this conversation previously during our Predator conversation about one of the cool things about the first Predator film, first Alien film, is you didn't see the Alien or the Predator for a good half hour.
Yeah, you didn't see it for about half the movie.
For half the movie before they showed up.
And then it's like, ooh!
Right. The same thing happened.
Yeah.
It was a lot of Tom Hardy, which, you know.
Let's be 100%
clear. He brought it. But it took a long time to get to Venom.
Let's be clear. This film was a franchise setup.
Very much so.
So I'm glad, and I knew that walking in.
Right.
And that made me excited because I, again, big fan.
Right.
Big fan of Venom in general. So I'm glad that they spent a solid amount of time on character development.
Right. And that's why I think, you know, after it ended, because I'm like, oh my gosh, it took him forever to get to Venom. But then I, you know, what came across first is a mild, not irritation, that's probably a little hard, but I was kind of like, man, it took forever to get to, but then I thought about it later and I'm like, really enjoyed the fact that they did all that build up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I can't have it both ways where I'm like, I want Venom to show up earlier, but I also want, you know, kind of going back to those old movies where they built up to the reveal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah, I 100% agree with you because, again, developing the character for people who are not initiated into the stories and origins of this particular character, and the only exposure they have is Tobey Maguire in a black Spider-Man suit.
Right. Followed by,
this was important.
A little bit of splash, a little dab of Topher Grace. A
little sprinkle of Topher Grace in there, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I mean, I really did, in the long run, enjoy that build up to it. But once, because there was quite a while where Venom was just the internal voice. And there was these funny moments, and then it kind of built
some
out from there.
Before they really started working together.
Before the full reveal, when he was confronted by Life Foundation Task Force.
Yeah, and then
was the full reveal of Venom scene.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when he starts really kicking butt, taking names, eating people.
Eating a lot of people, which became very funny because, you know, we're switching back to Eddie Brock.
But he also ate a lot of frozen tater tots.
Yeah.
That's one of Venom's favorite treats.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't get that reference.
Running through. So, that was a nice nod to some of the... So, he likes chocolate.
Okay.
He likes frozen tater tots.
Frozen tater tots.
He's good with cooked tater tots, but he seems to...
Seems to enjoy
some frozen tater tots from time to time as well.
See, that was one of those references I did not get. But I like those little things for people that are into the storyline that it's that, you know, kind of wink like, hey, we didn't forget about you. We didn't forget about you.
That was a little Easter egg for people who are watching for it.
Right.
See, and we kind of left off a little bit at the beginning and kind of as a thread throughout the film up to this point, that symbiote is that turns into Riot.
Right.
He's kind of traveling through hosts as he crosses, because the spaceship crashes in Malaysia, I think it was.
Right.
Somewhere.
With an A at the end.
Yeah. Somewhere weird.
Right. When one of the astronauts survived. I was doing air quotes for anybody just listening.
Yeah, air quotes on the radio. Cool story.
And so they put him in the ambulance to take him to the local hospital, but he wasn't really alive. He was
less
carrying
than alive.
Riot.
Yeah.
There was not a
quiet
riot.
And then it goes to an EMT from there.
Right.
And then to an old lady in a village.
Then
to a small child on an airplane?
No, it was after the airplane. So somehow that old lady, Riot, knew, you know, had to hire a taxi and get plane ticket.
Yeah. Well, they don't have TSA.
Let's not dig it.
TSA in Malaysia. Well, you can walk right up to the gate, I'm pretty sure.
I think that's
everywhere but the United States of America. You can meet up people at the gate and things like that. So
it's one of those loopholes that we just won't delve into.
Yeah, we're not going to explore it too much because it made the story go far. And then she infects
a little girl
who then infects
that somehow then gets into the lab.
Oh, that's right. She just walks into a highly secure facility owned by an ultra weirdo billionaire.
Right. Yeah. So, Riot's got some abilities that not quite sure.
Yeah.
He's got a, you know, platinum card that takes care of him anywhere in the universe, but
he's got that TSA pre-check, bro.
The pre-check.
He's got that pre-check.
In which case then he infects
the CEO of the Life Foundation.
Ba-dum-bum. That's building up to it. You knew it was going to...
Well, because
their path
he wants to
cross.
Go back out to space to collect
the rest.
As many of these creatures as possible so that he can build his own army, because that's what evil billionaires do.
Right. Well, and then it was Riot's or the symbiote's plan from the get-go to be captured
and
to be taken.
Venom grows a conscience.
Yeah, he gets the Jiminy Cricket, and
he's like,
because of being, you know, paired with Eddie Brock, decides to.
Well, he confesses that even though he's pretty badass, on his planet, he's a loser.
Yes, he continuously
just like Eddie Brock.
Just he tells him that he is a loser, just like you. Yeah, And so the, you know, last, you know, battle takes place at the next shuttle launch, because Riot and this guy are going to go back out to collect a whole bunch, and they're going to come back and invade Earth, eating and killing everyone.
Yeah.
It's going to be gonna take over.
Super big party.
Super big symbiote party.
Yeah. It's just an eating people party.
I haven't been to one of those, so It's been a long time.
College was weird for me.
College was weird. Don't talk about it.
So then, yeah, and this is something I always find interesting, mm-hmm. is how quickly Venom shows his hand as far as, like, what his weaknesses are.
Yeah, they kind of gave at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and that's true to the stories. It's right, always been that way. Venom has two real weaknesses: high-pitched noises and fire. And that's typical of the symbiotes.
I think he said that, or somehow it was given away very, very early in
Super
the movie.
Super early. During the human testing, I think, is when that...
That it's like, hey, check this out when I do this high-pitched noise, because that's what you do as a scientist is just...
Well, you experiment on things because you're a scientist.
Right. So you kind of knew early on that you know, those were the weaknesses of these symbiotes.
Which comes into play...
Right.
Later on.
Right. And so the only surviving, I think we discussed this. So there was four symbiotes at the beginning, that two of them died in testing.
They lost their host, and then they didn't get back into a contained oxygen.
Right. So they died.
Anaerobic environment. That's
right.
What I'm looking for.
Riot was out traveling the world looking for Carmen Sandiego.
Just doing things.
And
going places.
Doing stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff and things. And then, of course, Venom being things paired with Tom Hardy or Eddie Brock. And I think at some point in there it was, well, we need to eat people because otherwise I'm going to eat you.
You.
Is what Venom had told him. So it's, okay, we're just going to eat people.
We'll appease the beast, so it were. And,
They have to come to an understanding.
Yeah, that they only eat the bad people, you know, and that's all well and good.
Right. There's plenty of bad people out there.
Absolutely. Some of the things that I thought were fantastic, the nod to She-Venom when Michelle Williams catches the symbiote because it gets forcefully separated from Eddie Brock for a moment. Mm-hmm. So that nod to me was fantastic because... Again, going back to some of those old story arcs, there's a little difference because Michelle Williams was like kind of jazzed up about
afterwards.
I ate that dude.
Yeah,
as where her equivalent character in the books was like mortified by the fact that she ate a dude.
Right. Well, I think at first she was a little mortified, like, oh my
gosh. But she got pretty jacked about it. So I think we're going to see some more Lady Venom in the future films. You know, there's obviously there's nods to continuing this franchise, so
they did set it
which
up, which
led
again
to me a little bit of a conflict in my spirit because for example, when Carnage, right, who is the ultimate villain when we're talking about just Venom,
right,
there's other symbiotes. They're all stronger than Venom.
Right.
The reason that is because that's how their DNA works, and they were all technically descendants of Venom.
In the comic.
In some of the comic book story arcs. And so I'm very interested to see, because during the post-credit scenes with the one and only Woody Harrelson.
Was magnificent. And we should disclaim that... It was not just the two of us that went to.
No,
the
we took our boys.
Yeah,
I took one of my boys.
You took one of your boys. I took
the other one's four.
I took my son, to kind of get some additional feedback at them. So
I was just so jazzed that it didn't grab up an R rating because easily could have just gone full force with this and gone for an R rating. And I'm kind of glad they didn't.
They pulled the reins.
It was a happy, sad moment, to be 100% honest. The lack of an R rating in this was a happy, sad moment. Happy because, hey, now I can actually, you know, again, with me sitting next to him, I don't have a problem taking my kid to a comic book movie. He knows that they're going to be violent. We understand that those are not things that we do in real life.
Right, comic. We don't eat people.
And and sad because they could have done so much more with both the Eddie Brock character and the Venom character. And Woody Harrelson's upcoming character.
Right. Well, and I think that they could do, you know, like the Wolverine movies ended up, you know, last one being Logan.
Drop one.
Was an R.
Yeah.
So it could very well be possible that the next one
started on a storyline. They jacked that up from the beginning.
Oh my gosh. Stop it.
Well, they did.
Well.
Old Man Logan storyline, they just picked up the last chapter of it. Stupid.
Because you can only do so much. Anyway,
they could have done better. Anyway, back to this movie.
Yes. Well, and
the final fight scene was epic.
Right. I was going to say, we need to kind
of... So good.
It was the shuttle taking off, you know, symbiote versus symbiote, and then kind of them being ripped away from their hosts, and the hosts kind of fighting
as
well.
The hosts fighting while the symbiotes are fighting.
Was super cool.
Yeah.
So it ends up that they blow up the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Venom and Eddie Brock blow up the shuttle with them in it, which, as you said earlier, their weakness being fire.
Fire does not bode well for Riot.
Right. So as Venom is falling off the shuttle into the water, who ends up falling in the water is Eddie Brock.
Yep.
Who, without Venom.
Without you think, Venom, you so think we Venom, assume that Venom it's
is
over. Dead.
Yeah, Venom is done. So then it cuts to him and... You know, Michelle Williams sitting on, you know, the San Francisco stoop, and she's talking about how the power of having Venom was
kind of nice,
she and everything, but they had kind of still parted ways, and they were, but there was some,
there's still some little
romance there. Yeah.
There's still some things going
on. They were sharing a moment.
They had a moment.
And then all of a sudden you hear Venom's voice saying, "We're going to get her back."
Kind of like an episode of like an old 80s sitcom or early 90s sitcom where the guy's too nervous to talk to the girl. So his friends come up with this harebrained idea to talk into an earpiece and you just say what I say.
Yeah.
And it was like that. Like
Roxanne situation for Steve Martin fame. So you hear Venom's voice. So it's kind of that thing that he's still there. They are still together, so to speak. They're still joined, and then it's the comic thing of, you know, Eddie Brock saying, "You can only eat bad people. We need to come to an understanding."
And then, I love the fact that they finished the movie, the movie proper before any post credit scenes, which honestly, is anyone surprised by those anymore?
Right. Yeah.
It's just part of the movie. You sit down and you watch the credits.
Any Marvel movie, you sit
Any comic book movie anymore.
Right.
Even action movies, if there's even a hint that there might be a sequel to the film, you should probably sit through the credits because you'll probably see something that you're going to want to see.
And I should bring up the one other Marvel standpoint that is in every single Marvel movie.
Stanley.
They did not forget about was Stanley.
Doesn't matter if it's Sony, if it's Fox, if
fantastic.
It's Marvel Studios, Stanley shows
we
up.
We could do a whole episode entirely on Stanley cameos.
Absolutely. Maybe we will.
Yeah, maybe we will. And I can't remember what exactly his line is, but he's
given Eddie Brock relationship advice.
Yeah, but then he says
relationship
advice to both
of you. Stanley.
Yeah,
but then he says, and he knows. He can sense it.
That he knows that there's two different people. So he's just like, and I'm talking to both of you.
Yeah.
Or something. So it's a kind of funny little nod of, you know, Stanley talking to both Venom and Eddie Brock.
So enjoy those cameos while they last.
Yes.
Dude's getting old.
Yeah. So movie after he, you know, walks away talking to Venom, credits roll and we sit and wait. And then, one of the things he's talking to Michelle Williams about is that he got his job back.
Yeah.
It's because better than ever.
Yeah.
You know, and
because he was actually exposing horrific crimes.
Really, really bad crimes. He got his job back, only bigger and better. And now he
is Geraldo.
Yeah. He is the definition of Geraldo. He says something along the lines of, "I got the unpassable interview. I got an unbeatable interview." And she's like, "Well, you know, what do you mean, or who?" And he's like, "You'll just have to
wait and see what it is."
So credits roll, and then it is him pulling up in his motorcycle to San Quentin, and going through the prison that he is going to interview a prisoner.
A mass murderer.
A mass murderer, who you find out
is Cletus.
Cletus Cassidy.
Cletus Cassidy.
Correct.
The last name escaped me for a minute. Which, again, if you are a fan already, you know that that means coming soon is Carnage. And he alludes to that. And even in some interviews, you know, he because his name shows up in the IMDb.
Right.
And that usually is published well in advance of the movie. So
we knew Woody Harrelson.
Somebody asked him a question in an interview shortly after the film came out. You know, they're like, "Hey, we see you're in the credits for this film. You know, what's your role?" And he goes, "You know, I was only in this one for a few seconds.
Right.
But I'm really, really be in the next one."
Yeah.
So
they are very, very much setting it up for the character of Carnage.
Of Carnage, who
is
one of the best villains.
Right. And when you see him in this cage and he's all that, evidently he had cut himself somewhere and was writing in blood.
Yeah.
Eddie Brock or something. I think he was writing Eddie Brock's name. And then, you know, kind of said, you know, come closer so I can, you know, you can ask me, you know, some whatever, and drops the line of soon
you'll see all the carnage
or
something along those lines
of when I get out of here, there will be carnage. Or
that's right. He's like, I'm going to get out of here. And when I do, there's going to be carnage,
which is a kind of,
and so that leads me to believe that in fact, they will stay true to that part of the storyline because let's face it. If he was already hosting the Carnage symbiote at that point, he ain't gonna be in no cage.
Right. And for those that don't, and again, I'm, you know, not as knowledgeable, but I know that part of Venom, part of the symbiote, gets onto Cletus Cassidy.
That's correct. It's kind of a spawn almost.
Okay.
And so that's what it turns out to be. And again, it's how their DNA kind of works. Is that the next generation is always stronger than the generation that came before it.
Okay.
Which is why Carnage is always so difficult for Venom to vanquish.
Right, he's stronger.
He's
faster. And he's stronger.
They have the technology.
They have the technology. But
little DJ Cyborg shout out right there.
So $6 million man. Yeah. In the comic book, it becomes that this part of Venom, the part of the symbiote, gets onto Cletus Cassidy, who's a severe serial killer.
He's
a bad dude.
He's bad, okay?
Like, really, really bad.
He's not cool.
So they're setting it up. But one of the references, you know, because it was played by Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
I don't know about your son, but my son was like, why is the dude from Solo playing that guy? Like, what? And... you know, but becoming
granted, it's not like I'm saying I've shown my kids Natural Born Killers,
right?
But
that puts a whole back.
But there
story
are
for us,
there are a lot of younger people than us who will see this right. film Venom and probably have a similar question as to
what's
how
the
is
deal?
How does that guy fit right. into that role? Because usually he just plays a crazy dude kind of anymore. He's been in a couple, he was in the Hunger Games films, you know. And,
right. In more recent years, he's become more
a little more
family friendly.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Not like Adam Sandler level family friendly.
No.
Thank you, Woody.
We
appreciate
it. I mean, but doing Hunger Games or doing
War
for Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Doing Solo, you know, and so it's more family friendly, if you will. But for us to see this actor that can portray,
I think
a crazy
Woody
dude.
Harrelson might actually be just a little bit psychopath, just 3%. He's actually crazy,
right? It's just on this line.
Yeah,
right. No, I got you. I'm with you.
Chaotic good.
Right.
That's what he would be classified on as a personality scale, maybe.
I can agree with that. But it was kind of interesting for me to kind of see the difference because, you know, my son who's 13 is like, why is this a big deal?
Why is
it a big deal when you and I are kind of gasping and
so
going,
listen
oh
up,
my
kids.
Gosh.
It's a big deal.
It's a big
because
deal.
Because it's a freaking big deal.
Yeah. Coming from Tucker and the Beard.
That's it.
So it was just kind of a little.
So.
We know how crazy he can.
Yeah,
portray that character, which is just kind of exciting.
100%.
But does definitely sets it up for
some sequels, and I'm I for one am super excited. You know, I was always bummed out when, you know, some of my other favorite, you know, kind of anti-hero characters, listen, Fox,
Ghost Rider.
Fox screwed up the Wolverine storyline. They could have done so much better than they did. Didn't get it right until Logan.
Right. Well, yeah, I said we'll agree to disagree because they weren't bad. The character itself, the Hugh Jackman as Wolverine was awesome.
Yeah, there may never be another Wolverine that is as good as Hugh Jackman has been.
Right.
We'll have to see what the next generation of new actors has to offer.
Right.
Because he did that for a long time.
Right. And now Marvel
themselves. He was a great Wolverine. It was just they went so far all over the place with his storylines. Mm-hmm. And while Wolverine isn't exactly an anti-hero, he's not he's a reluctant hero at best. The lack of follow-up on some of the Punisher movies, they could have done so many things with it, but they didn't.
Right.
But that's another thing for another time. So how are you rating this on our scale? And if you're new, we'll give you the scale real quick. And that's the highest rating we can give it is go see it. The next rating down is go rent it.
Correct.
And then stream it.
And then skip it. So I'm kind of torn on this one just for the fact of you need to understand the movie that you're going into. If you're not a comic book fan, then wait and rent it.
Yeah, rent it. But if you're a comic book fan or even a comic book movie fan,
I would say
you need to see this one in the theater.
Yes.
That's my recommendation. It's enough of a spectacle. The sight, the sound, everything that goes along with it.
Correct.
If you like this kind of movie, go see this one.
Yes.
If you're a passive fan, sure, you can probably wait for Redbox on this. But
I would
lean towards
seeing it.
I'd go.
Right. I would. So my vote would be for see it. I'm happy that I saw it.
Absolutely.
I was excited to go see it beforehand. I was not disappointed.
Yeah.
By any means. Now I will end it with this. Would you put it in? Out of all the Marvel movies that you've seen, would you put it in your top five?
No.
So that, you know.
But the top five is pretty hard to crack.
Right.
Because.
Top 10,
yes.
You would put it in your top 10.
Top 10 Marvel movies, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Better than half of the Avengers series, including, you know, when we're talking about the individual character stories, this falls better than some of them.
I will agree to disagree on that one.
Just I'll put this one. It would not be above Thor: Dark World.
Okay, I'll go with you there.
See, but that's what I'm saying.
Right. So I'm just saying it would be, you know, maybe 11
it's
or 12.
It's in the top ten for me, for sure.
So it'd be in the top 10 for you.
Yeah.
But that says a lot because you are more ingrained in the Venom storyline than I am. I'm just a big nerd.
I admitted my bias very early on in this episode.
But if it held up for you, then definitely
100% it held up.
Yeah, I very much say see it.
Cool. So, that's about it for us today.
Yeah.
What are we going to see next week?
I can't remember. We were going through a couple of them. What were we?
For some reason, the name of the movie is escaping me.
Looking at Bad Times at the...
Yes, Bad Time at the El Royale.
Was that one.
I think that's the one we landed on.
Right, but Rotten Tomatoes is kind of being...
Yeah. I think we'll probably see that. It's either that or Night School.
Right, and I think, we'll flip a coin on that.
We'll flip a coin on it. We're going to see one of those two next week, and so we'll be back. It might be a good movie review,
or it might be
a bad movie review. We'll find out.
A lot more good stuff coming from us. We got some more cruising stuff. And,
absolutely. You'll see some videos coming from us. Our logo artwork is almost finished, so we'll actually launch an official fan page so you can find us there as well. But until then, find Ed-Word Tucker on Facebook or me, Callan Hoskins, and you can find our video content on our personal Facebook pages for the time being.
Yeah.
So, and until next time,
I'm Tucker.
I'm the Beard, and we're out.